Greetings, Sleepy Salsa here on this Wednesday, August 29th of 2012, and welcome to the 55th episode of the Last Bastille podcast. This broadcast is kindly hosted exclusively over at radioforall.net. I should also take this opportunity to mention that the opening theme is Ashley Alicizes a Puzzling Predicament, and the outro will be Bose's King's Quest, both of them available pursuant to Creative Commons attribution, specifically CC BY NC SA 3.0 unported. For more information on Creative Commons, visit them at creativecommons.org. For any other content that may not be of original authorship by yours truly, any such material is used under the sincere intention of fair use. If you wish to understand the nature of the situation we are all suffering under, and what can be done about it, feel free to visit the Last Bastille blog, which is located over at thelastbastille.wordpress.com. Tonight we'll be covering another essential concept, that is, those fundamental bare-bones basics of what must be understood if humanity is to ever reassert self-determination. And tonight will be the article that was originally posted over at the Last Bastille blog on January 4th of 2012, entitled Predictive Programming. Everyone enjoys a good story, whether it is a novel, music, or TV shows and movies. Consuming fiction is a true American pastime. Tales of intrigue, episodes filled with dramatic moments, and comedic incidents abound in the realm of adult make-believe. What is almost never mentioned is how such a powerful form of media has been regularly used to push the acceptance of ideas that would normally be rejected by the population. One particularly insidious methodology used by propagandists is known as predictive programming. Have you ever noticed how small talk will commonly come around to different forms of entertainment? Specific tastes in reality shows is pretty common, where normal folk chat about the fanciful goings-on of other people who themselves pretend to be genuine when they are, in fact, still acting out their roles upon the stage. The distinction of what is real and what is fake is so unbelievably blurred that the mainline public, or at least significant portions of it, have a real tough time telling the difference. Notice, for instance, just how much Hollywood celebrities are revered for the gods they seem to be. They are utterly worshipped, especially by their fans, as if an entire career doing nothing but pretending all day is worthy of being considered a hero or heroine of some sort. In the Soviet Union, as well as throughout other periods of history, there was the notion of culture creation, or even the culture creation industry. This was the idea that different forms of media, such as books, adverts, magazines, music, fashion, and so on, can be used, either in a mutually exclusive manner, or preferably synergistically, to push a specific worldview. For instance, science fiction, whose setting is in the future, prepares the mind ahead of time by incorporating technology that is soon to be used in real life into the plot. This produces an appearance of natural progress, as well as a feeling of inevitability when such technologies are eventually manifested in reality. Culture creation is, essentially, establishment propaganda. As I mentioned in my most recent documentary, Jamming Culture, Creating Guerrilla Media, which is, as a side note, that's only available now through SneakerNet, predictive programming is a subtle form of psychological conditioning provided by the media to acquaint the public with planned societal changes that are to be implemented by our leaders. If and when these changes are put through, the public will already be familiar with them and will accept them as natural progressions, thus lessening any possible resistance to it. What this means is that human beings are being experimented upon with very sophisticated mind manipulation techniques that aim to sublimate cognitive processes to whatever the establishment propagandists want to accept. Obviously, the implications of this are staggering, for it suggests at the very least, some of what we think of as our own thoughts are not ours to begin with in the first place. The further implications for individual autonomy and even the use of free will are also brought into serious question. The father of public relations, Edward Bernays, wrote in chapter 1 of his magnum opus, Propaganda, quote, "The conscious and intelligent manipulation of the organized habits and opinions of the masses is an important element in democratic society. We are governed, our minds molded, our tastes formed, our ideas suggested, largely by men we have never heard of. We are dominated by the relatively small number of persons who understand the mental processes and social patterns of the masses. It is they who pull the wires which control the public mind, who harness old social forces, and contrive new ways to bind and guide the world." End quote. So the man whose very profession involved advertising for the fluoridation of public water supplies, as well as promulgating the notion that women should smoke cigarettes because they are torches of liberty, truly understood the dynamics of what was going on here. Herbert Krugman, who in 1969 researched the physiological effects of television viewing, found, quote, "Through repeated trials that within 30 seconds, the brain waves switched from predominantly beta waves, indicating alert and conscious attention, to predominantly alpha waves, indicating an unfocused, receptive lack of attention. The state of aimless fantasy and daydreaming below the threshold of consciousness." End quote. Interestingly, when the subject began reading again, the beta waves returned. Krugman also discovered that, quote, "The brain's left hemisphere, which processes information logically and analytically, turns out while the person is watching TV." End quote. So what is happening is that the television set is literally putting people into a dream state. In addition to Krugman's findings, you can also see how fiction, especially high drama, is most effective through television and movies. So-called entertainment builds itself as something relatively harmless, which in effect lowers your guard. Once that happens, you begin to identify with a major character and sympathize with their actions, even if they conflict with your own morality. Generally speaking, the males identify with the lead male protagonist and vice versa. Ever wonder why it's such a common trend in stories that there are two lead male and female characters? It's usually because they are the role models for how you should act in a given number of situations, regardless of whether you approve of it or not. You are not aware that you are being downloaded through emotive sequences that deliberately manipulate your psyche, instead of being presented with logical ones that lay out facts and arguments. One technique that is commonly used in predictive programming are passing comments by the characters. They could be discussing a homicide case, what to order for their dinner date, or what their next move should be. One of them will give a passing comment about an otherwise unrelated yet emotionally charged topic, such as climate change, gay marriage, partisan politics, and so on. Sometimes one of the other characters will serve as a foil, that is a contrast to the original comments. But even when that happens, it's usually something that in real life is a non-issue. Thus, through fiction, a topic of no significance suddenly takes on a new importance, and the corollary to this is that truly important matters are utterly ignored. Just as getting the audience emotionally riled up over trivial matters is essential, pacification towards things that actually affect their own lives is crucial as well. People who personally identify with their chosen corporate sports teams do so with a sense of tribal allegiance. Of course, this is false, for they are not participating in their destiny with others, but are merely spectators, observing action from the fringes of the field of play. It is not uncommon to see dedicated sports fans being disenfranchised with others' fears of their own lives, where they have no control and are utterly helpless and trapped. Time is a key aspect of control. The time that is spent on indoctrination is time not spent on thinking and eventually on liberation. In order to get around the effects of predictive programming, there are some options available to you. One is to simply never watch television or movies ever again. Another is to minimize the amount of what you do watch. One such recommendation is nothing longer than 1 hour or one single movie per day. Of what you do watch, be much more selective about the programming. Attempt to select content that presents logical sequences, since the potential for manipulation is much reduced. I would recommend a combination of tutorials and documentaries, but just be wary that some of the latter can use even more sophisticated programming techniques. Alan Watts suggested that we can all learn how to study television by never getting emotionally involved in the storyline and critically analyzing all the politically correct inserted words, slogans, and phrases in the dialogue. Taking notes is essential, given that you can prove not only to yourself, but to others as well, about all the tiny yet important programming that has been slipped into the plot. Ask someone their thoughts about a given topic, and if they give you standard television answers, then just forget it. You just can't save a television addict, given that the programming has gone too deep. But if you see a spark of their own opinion, then you might have a chance to work with them. And again, that was my article on predictive programming. And now I'd like to give something of a brief postscript. I've noticed within the alternative media that there is a tendency to emphasize certain communications mediums over others. Literally anything that's written, audio, and video are the three main ones, and on the internet that's expressed usually through blogs, podcasts, and streaming online videos. What I've noticed, and I did hint at in the article very briefly, but I wanted to expound upon it, is that a lot of folks who are really brand new and are just starting to see through the fog have this tendency to only watch documentaries. And so the problem of because YouTube said so is that much more pernicious. You know, as a former videographer, I can appreciate the level of detail and work that goes into making a film. And I can also appreciate how certain editing techniques can both clarify and manipulate the viewer. Both. It's especially if you have like fast editing cuts or you leave out a portion of something. And obviously I'll be addressing this more in the future. It's just that it's interesting. I mean, a lot of the guys, you know, who start getting really upset about the government and want to restore the Constitution or something to that effect, you know, Ron Paul, rah, 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 it's usually because they saw, like, a documentary on 9/11, or they saw a documentary about eugenics or the police state or something to that effect. And what I find disconcerting is that a lot of those documentaries, while having some good information in them, either mix it in with other data that's just been proven incorrect, or, and this is usually much more common, they'll propose, usually it's toward the end of the film, things that the viewer do that either have already been done, so it's a moot point, or things that provably don't work or something to that effect. And so looking at it from both the watchdog news and analysis side, as well as the think tank, you know, the brainstorming think tank analyst side, I used to be big on documentaries, short videos, films, etc. I guess you could say I had the equivalent of my own TV show of sorts. I mean, that was the Last Bastille, and there were actually 3 seasons. And of course, now that's only available over SneakerNet as well. But like I said in my goodbye video, you know, if something can be mentioned either on just audio, like a podcast, or something that's written like a blog, there's no need to really put it in a video, ever. I mean, that's just masturbatory. I mean, this is another reason as a class, I guess you could say, this is why I don't like vloggers. Very few people can do it well. There's really only 2 individuals who I will not name here that I can think of that actually do it well. And one of them does it raw, which is interesting. The other one uses a lot of editing, and you can tell, and it looks good, but I mean, this is just the nature of the beast. So I really don't see, I mean, there's only really a couple instances where something in video can actually be good, where, again, like a tutorial or a good documentary, a very good one, can actually be helpful. But, I mean, there's little applications. I mean, unless it's going to be like a police encounter type thing, a tutorial, or something else that's very visually dependent. If it's not visually dependent, just somebody yakking at you, you know, make a podcast instead. Like what I'm doing right now. I mean, this, like, you hearing, you know, if this makes it onto YouTube or Daily Motion, Vimeo, any of the video sharing sites, you have nothing really to watch at unless somebody who mirrors it, you know, throws up a picture of, like, a cat playing a piano or something. Or a picture of George Washington and a bunch of the guys on a boat sailing across the Delaware or whatever. There's nothing, because this is audio only, there's nothing really that's, like, the visual part of the video. Add in the fact that there is this problem of, because YouTube said so, that is deliberately manipulative, just as a communications medium, more so than the other two, that's really what kind of causes a big amount of concern, because I understand exactly how that works. So, and of course, that's the other thing too. So you have, you know, your brand new political dissident types who just start seeing through the fog, and then it's interesting, they want to bitch about, you know, TV, you know, stuff on the TV, Fox News, MSNBC, you know, MTV, and the rest of the assorted potpourri of the corporate whore mainstream media, and then the next thing you know, they're watching Daily Motion, Vimeo, YouTube, etc. You know, videos are up on there, and like, oh, you know, they're awakened now is how they call it. Oh, because they watch videos online, but you're still watching videos that are edited, that are visually, you know, it's the same shit, but in a different medium. You know, the internet is not all that holy. I mentioned this in other articles I've written, and I think I did a few podcasts that did address this at least somewhat. Especially if you go back, I don't remember the number right offhand, but it's the interview I did with Randy Mack. The episode title was "You Have Tread on Me," but he and I discussed this. I mean, it is what it is. So just be very careful when you are looking at alternative media, videos specifically, that you're not being manipulated too. If somebody is either like doing like a PowerPoint slideshow type thing, or it's a tutorial like, you know, how to change your car oil or something sexier or something to that effect, or it's like something that's raw footage like a police encounter, generally speaking, that is reliable. Anything other than that, I would not really trust all that much. And frankly, if somebody wants to make a speech, they should make a podcast. And that's really how I feel about it. In any case, for next episode, we will continue seeing through the fog of illusion by exploring another essential concept, that of austerity. I'm Sleepy Salsa, and thanks for listening.